Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cap League. I am your host, Max Patillo, back for another week. Game picks, game results. Man, what a week it was again in the NFL. So much going on. You don't know what to expect week to week in this league. It's incredible. It keeps us on the edge of our seat for sure. So this week, I wanted to get into sort of the other side of my thinking and maybe flaws in my thinking. And I wanted to make sure I'm being honest with myself, not playing into too many of my biases and trying to almost argue with myself a little bit so that I can make sure I'm getting the clear picture on a lot of these structural things that I'm claiming for GMs and how teams operate, how they're structured and personnel decisions and obviously financial decisions, since this is Cap League. So dealing with the cap, I mean, honestly, most of these teams, they have top-notch cap analysts. They have, you know, 10, 20 people probably in their arsenal working on cap situations and different models, and they're able to manipulate the cap. And you can get away with making some mistakes on guys here and there. And if you have a good cap management team, you can move off those guys, find a way to relieve that cap pressure, either by trading a guy, cutting a guy, the way you structure contracts, pushing money off into the future. And you can pretty much, all the tricks have been done in this organization of cap where guys can really get at anything. You look at, you know, in the past couple of years of this show, you know, a lot of our biggest things, the things that almost got this show to exist in the first place, was these teams signing, you know, guys like Jimmy Garoppolo and Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, these type of huge contracts that just blew our minds, didn't understand them. How are these teams going to cope with making such huge mistakes? And with, you know, we were absolutely right on Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. We said we wouldn't have paid them. And I mean, with Goff, it was very easy. But the Rams still did it. They still made the choice. And that's what made me want to have a podcast, really, was because I felt like, okay, well, that's a pretty big variation in that I can explore, because I felt correct about what I would have done in that situation. And not saying I know more than GMs. I'm not, you know, in the Rams organization. I don't know Jared Goff personally, but I've seen him play a lot. I think I'm not alone that I wouldn't have paid him. I think a lot of people felt like it was a big stretch. And really, like, I don't mind paying these guys, but these deals they're getting, you know, $30, $35, $40 million contracts, it gets to be outrageous. Sure enough, they pay him and they took a big slide, and Jared Goff's play was what was holding them back. And because the Rams obviously have a good ownership group, good GM, good coach, they were able to mitigate that mistake. So as catastrophic as it seemed, Yeah, you do miss out on some years of guys like Aaron Donald in their prime. You only have those precious years to do things like that. And you can see that their roster is deteriorating slowly, but it is. It's not as good as it was. You also paid a guy like Todd Gurley, which you still haven't got out from under that contract. So these have a ripple effect. You don't have a great running game. You've gotten lucky with your offensive line. You've gotten lucky, and Andrew Whitworth is still upright. He's playing into his old age. He's still effective. But you were able to unload that Goff contract. You were able to unload a little bit of that Gurley contract. But you can see there's a little deterioration. You also went and made a big move for Jalen Ramsey. You haven't had as much draft capital to work with. And this takes its toll over time. The Rams are still looking good. They're still solid. And getting a guy like Stafford, it just worked out perfectly. And it's amazing that they were able to do that. I heard that McVay basically like was in Mexico and ran into Stafford down there or something. And they were like, hey, you should come play for us. Stafford, of course, wanted to get out of Detroit. And man, I mean, that just worked out perfectly. They traded, you know, picks and Goff and got out of Goff's contract, got a guy like Stafford. Everyone knew Stafford was much more talented than Goff. Goff, he never should have been paid that money in the first place. So that was ridiculous. And now, you know, the Rams have managed their cap pretty well, covered up some of their flaws. And look, I mean, all these teams are going to have gaffes and mistakes. But there are certain mistakes that can be avoided. That's kind of what the points I try to make in this show. But, you know, when I look at things, I can look at where I might be wrong. One of the interesting things I heard this last week, Colin Cowherd's show, was he was asking Tom Brady just about his career. And Brady was saying how it's changed so much from being you could dominate physically in the older days, you know, because Tom's played over 20 years now and the game's changed so much over those years. You could dominate physically early on and you could either win with great finesse or great skill players or win with toughness. And some teams had both. But now, because of rule changes, because of the safety aspect that the NFL needs to implement, they've cut out a lot of that physicality that happens on defenses. A lot more penalties for defensive players. They're trying to protect players. And it's a good thing. It needs to happen for the NFL. Otherwise, you know, with the concussions and all the injuries, it's just not quite sustainable for that level of violence, especially with the athletes there are today. But it may have been a little bit of an overcorrection for the NFL. Their defense is almost impossible now. But Brady is basically saying that nowadays it's just basically a skills contest. It's not really much about physicality anymore, and it just can't be because of the rules. And so you could say that what Tom's saying is basically like whoever has the best wide receivers and best receiving tight ends or running backs and skill players, finesse players, quarterbacks, are going to win the games, win the matchups, because you just can't push them around like you could with other older finesse teams. And this is, you know, pretty true. And that will go against basically what I say with you should basically pick up wide receivers and running backs last. That should be the last priority on your list. And those would be considered like the skill positions. I would push back a little bit that I still believe that the game is still won at the line of scrimmage. There's been no Super Bowl winning team or even playoff contender that has a terrible offensive line. Now, there's been some Seahawks teams that have, you know, won a playoff game here or there that did not have great offensive lines, but those are more the outliers. And even Tom's Bucks, great offensive line. And that's my position of priority. So I still think the physicality might not exist as much in the open field, definitely not as much, with defensive backs being able to just crush guys coming across the middle and wide receivers not running, wanting to run those routes. And that's true that that physicality has been wiped out of the game. But the physicality in the trenches, it's still, I mean, it's still a fierce battle, defensive line versus offensive line. And for me, my position's a priority. You've got to have both. And I would prioritize them still over wide receivers and running backs, because not only because it's still, the games are still won and lost at the line of scrimmage, but also wide receivers and running backs are a position of plenty. College puts out tons of great players that you can fill in those positions. And last week I kind of talked about, and the last couple weeks, basically the positions of scarcity and quarterback not really being one of them, that quarterback is somewhat plenty. And that I could see that being a flaw maybe in my thinking a little bit after I watch a guy like Sam Darnold really struggle, guys like Teddy Bridgewater really struggle, the, you know, Andy Daltons, the Jared Goffs, Jameis Winstons, Jalen Hurts isn't playing as well anymore. And so the quarterbacking position, it may be more scarce than I'm leading on. And while it seems like a lot of these guys come right into the league and pop, I think some of the high picks in the draft can play right away. And that seems to be proving out pretty well. Mac Jones looks good. Joe Burrow's looking good. You go down the list of, but you know, it gets shaky. Herbert's looking good. But then these guys are kind of taking some years to get their feet going. And, you know, like a Trey Lance hasn't really gotten off the ground. It's even, you know, Kyler Murray took him a couple years and he's having great success now. So it kind of seems like guys do well right away. You know, a guy like Dak, he did great right in the league. He came into a great situation, great roster. So, you know, Baker Mayfield is kind of struggling now. If Cleveland extends him, gives him an extension and pay, that would be probably the biggest gaffe of all time. But, you know, Josh Allen's another guy who took a little while to develop. And so do you really, as a franchise, have the patience to be mediocre to bad for a couple of years while these guys progress? Now, Lamar Jackson basically sat the bench of first half of his first season and came right in and kind of took the league by storm. So it's rolling the dice. I think sometimes I downplay how important the quarterback position is. And really, when you're looking at these matchups, which I'll get into my game picks soon, but it's really, it comes down to who are the quarterbacks. And, you know, you're going to pick the Aaron Rodgers, the Mahomes, the Josh Allens, the Lamar Jacksons. You're going to pick them most of the time to win. And It really does. I mean, obviously it's the most important position. We do weight it the most in our analysis, in our equation of price to production ratios. And yeah, it could still be argued it is a position of scarcity. I would say that if you were allocating your roster correctly and you have a great offensive line and great defense, that a lot of quarterbacks can succeed with that. But even the, you know, guys like Mahomes are struggling right now. And so it could be argued that I've been a little skewed towards, well, you can just kind of put anyone in there as long as they're cheap. And we'll see how that plays out as the season goes along. That's a lot of things with, you know, me questioning myself. I really do need to see the entire season play out before I can make concrete judgments about whether I was right or wrong. You know, I've kind of laid my groundwork for what I think should happen, and that can still all play out and be correct about it. But I have to let the whole season play out and reassess it after that. I look at a guy, another important thing is, you know, my maligning of the running back position is when I look at Derrick Henry. I mean, they just destroy the Chiefs. And Derrick Henry, you know, he destroyed my Seahawks. He destroyed the Bills. And the guy is just huge. And of course, we do not pay running backs. It's still just something we would never do. But a guy like Derrick Henry, here he is, and he's kind of looks like an MVP candidate. And he's just so big and such a force that they can just run him all day, and it makes Tannehill's life great. He can play action. They got Julio Jones and AJ Brown, and it's all just kind of rolling for the Titans. And man, I mean, when you have defenses who have adjusted to being smaller to cover more ground and be faster on defense, you're going to have teams like Kansas City who just cannot tackle the guy. They're too small. And so he's dominating as of right now. Now, you know, it's a long season, still a lot of games left. He'll probably wear down at some point. The shelf life for these running backs is only so long. Trust me, they all break down at about 4 or 5 years, you know, 6, 7 max. You're not going to have 10-year careers with these guys. So, you know, you usually pay them after their 4th or 5th year in the league. And so when you're doing that, you're paying them in the 4th or 5th year. You're going to get a couple more years of the guy at maybe peak competition, peak sustainability and youth. Those carries add up and he starts to wear down, and then all of a sudden it's like an Ezekiel Elliott type thing where you're just so expensive and you're not even like moving the needle for the team at all. You're not even that good. And so we'll see how Derrick Henry plays out. But, you know, a running back like that, like a Barry Sanders, like a Walter Payton, like a Marshawn Lynch, I mean, those guys, they really can change the nature of your team. And you talk about physicality and wanting to be physical in this day and age, that's still a position where you can really bring the physicality back to your team in sort of a physicality vacuum we have right now in the league. So that's something I could be wrong about, is if you have the marquee running back, maybe I could see paying him, but not top dollar. I don't understand why it always has to be market topping. Maybe it's just because of what the players accept and what GMs give into. They set new markets. But you look at a guy like Todd Gurley, I mean, that guy, he won an MVP. And he was so dominant. And they paid him, and he just fell off a cliff. And is, I don't even know if he's in the league anymore. Is he still on the Falcons? I don't know. But it doesn't matter. It's they traded him, you know? Or they might have cut him. It was over. And all that money went to dead money. And I think the Rams are still paying for that. So, man, that is just cautionary. Most running backs are like that. You just got to keep drafting them. And my argument is you could do the same with your quarterback and just always have tons of money to spend on that line of scrimmage. That's so important. And on those corners, because that's a position of scarcity big time in the league. Another thing I could be wrong about, I'm looking at Dak, and he's playing great ball. They did just have a bye week, and really Dallas could win a lot of games this year. Now, does that mean they've made great moves, or does it just mean they've made better moves than the teams they're playing against, particularly in their division? That division is just awful year in and year out. We're talking Washington. We're talking New York Giants. We're talking Philadelphia Eagles. All those teams are kind of a mess. And Dallas gets to play them. You know, that's six games of their schedule every year. And so we don't know about Dallas yet. And it doesn't really matter how many games Dallas wins in the regular season, because we know they've had good regular seasons in the past. All that matters is when they play the good teams. How do they do against the good teams? That's when we find out in the playoffs. Like I've said, if Dak goes out and wins one or two playoff games, then that'll mean he belongs there. And that'll mean that maybe you can make a case he did deserve that money. But that has to play out. And if they go lay an egg in the playoffs again, that's going to prove my point. And man, you cannot be paying $45 million to a non-playoff winning team quarterback. So that really has to happen for Dallas this year. And I don't know that they're good enough to do it. So that has to play out. Russell Wilson's another one where, you know, I kind of thought that, you know, the Seahawks are always good, but they're not, they haven't been great for a while. A lot of that's because they're paying Russell so much. And here he goes and he gets hurt. And Geno Smith came right into that Rams game and looked amazing. And that was kind of shocking. And it kind of proved that, well, maybe other quarterbacks can do just as well here. Problem is, Seahawks are still paying that money for a guy that's not out there. So Russell's on the sideline now. So they haven't been able to plan for a roster without Russell Wilson. So an injury is a little different. It's not really proof that the system doesn't work. But if they were to, let's say, trade Russell or even just let him go and they don't have to pay that contract anymore, then all of a sudden you can use all that money to improve your defense, improve offensive linemen, and make strides in those positions of scarcity we always talk about, and then try to find the next quarterback. Now, where I think, I mean, you look at Geno Smith's basically been inept in these games. They're only barely letting him throw, and when he does throw, he doesn't look great. Now, he did play in the rain against the Saints, but Russell Wilson, I'm pretty sure you can't overlay the game side by side and see how Russell would have played compared to Geno. It just doesn't work that way. Russell could have gotten blown out in the last two games, whereas Geno managed the game and kept it close, and the Seahawks were within, you know, this last week, if they would have just made a couple field goals, they would have won. And the week before against Pittsburgh, they could have won that game as well. So, or, you know, they could have gotten blown out with Russell. They could have blown the other teams out with Russell. But it does seem as they're structured now, they really need Russell. And so you could make the argument, well, if they really need him, then he's really worth that money. And that's a justifiable argument. So we'll see when he comes back how they look. It's an injury where it shouldn't affect his throwing too much. Once he's healthy, he's healthy. And his legs are still there. So we'll be able to get a good assessment of where this team is with Russell Wilson. And if they can maintain or at least be competitive with a quarterback costing that much money, I don't know. The defense seems to be improving. But we'll see. We'll see how that works out. One thing I was pretty right about was the 49ers all along. They have just not looked great. It's been rough for them. And a lot of people just keep blaming things on injuries. And every team has injuries, you know. But when you have a quarterback like Jimmy G and he gets hurt, which he's gotten hurt every year of his career, you still paid him. And he gets hurt again and he comes back and he's awful. It's just kind of like you made your bed and you got to lay in it. And I've said that they were not going to be the same team. DeForest Buckner was a huge loss. They picked Eric Armstead over DeForest Buckner. It should have been the other way around. Buckner came back and beat them with the Colts this time. And you lost to Carson Wentz. The Niners are not a contender. In the end, all that matters is winning. You don't get style points. You don't get to ride your history. This isn't the 80s anymore. This is now, and the Niners haven't been good for a while. And Shanahan was supposed to be a savior. He's sort of just automatically lumped into geniuses of the game. And yeah, he's a great play caller, great designer of plays, but the guy just doesn't win. And you just have to win in the end. And they gave him a 6-year contract, him and John Lynch. They have not replenished their roster very well. They've lost a lot of guys. Their secondary has never been good. Nick Bosa, he's a solid player, but I mean, he's not an Aaron Donald. He's not going to shift the balance on your defense alone. He needs help. And the Niners are in trouble, and I'm sure Shanahan feels the pressure. Somehow, he's just gotten this big name. It probably part of it's because he comes from his dad. Their family has a big name, winning Super Bowls. And so that's helped him a lot. And he's just got this aura to not go under the scrutiny as much as a lot of other coaches would have they had his record, which is a terrible record since he's been there. And so you just have to maybe make a change if you're the Niners. Like I said, they went halfway on their quarterback, and it's definitely biting them big time. So let's finish up with these game picks. I have my week 7 picks. I went 7-6. So I've gone 9-7, 9-7, 6-8, and 7-6. And this has been a lot harder than I thought it would be. There's a lot of randomness and a lot of luck in the NFL. And a lot of this is biting me. But I still have a winning record. I'm 31-28. So we're going to move on to week 8. And my week 8 game picks are Packers Cardinals tomorrow night, Thursday night football, should be a good matchup. The Packers are going to be missing a couple receivers. Davante Adams and Lazar are out. And I don't know if Rodgers is really playing all that well. Their defense has been pretty much carrying them. And so they're going to face a Cardinals team. They're going to have to chase Kyler Murray around. And the Cardinals are just, they got a lot of momentum. They're going to be at home, national TV game. They can make a big statement, beat a real Packers team. I'm going to take the Cardinals. Jags, Seahawks. I'll take the Seahawks. Got to beat the Jaguars if you're the Seahawks. Panthers, Falcons. I'll take Falcons. Falcons, kind of lingering around. Panthers seem like they're just in destructive mode. I'll take Falcons. Dolphins, Bills. Definitely Bills. Niners, Bears. I'll take Bears. We'll see Justin Fields. Seems like the Niners are really struggling, so I'll take the Bears there at home. Steelers, Browns. I'll take Browns. Eagles, Lions. I'll take Eagles. Titans, Colts. Titans, keep rolling. Bengals, Jets. Definitely Bengals. Rams, Texans. I'll take Rams. Pats, Chargers. Patriots. Washington, Broncos. I'll take Washington. Bucks, Saints. I'll take Bucks. Cowboys, Vikings. I'll take Cowboys. Giants, Chiefs. I'll take the Chiefs. So those are my game picks. Hopefully we'll do better this week. That's going to be it for this week's show. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Cap League, and enjoy the week, everyone. Hope everyone's doing well. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next week.